Hello, my beautiful friends. I am Laurel Bleeden Maffei with Illuminating Souls, welcoming you to this episode of Sleepy Bedtime Blessings, a podcast designed to help you rest, relax, and fall asleep, all while deepening in your connection with your beautiful team of angels who love you so. If we're meeting for the first time, I'm an angelic practitioner, a spiritual teacher, and an encourager of souls. And I offer one-on-one angel sessions, soul mentoring, and a variety of classes designed to inspire your spirit. And you can learn more at my website, illuminatingsouls.com, where you can also sign up for my mailing list. And then you'll be in the know of all of my offerings. And I also have a daily inspiration email list where you can sign up to receive an inspiring email from me every weekday. So lots of ways we can connect, but for now, the angels and I are here to co-create a sweet, sacred, light-filled space where you can replenish and restore. And if this is your bedtime, we are also here to help you fall asleep. So this podcast is an unlikely mashup of two of my favorite forms of self-care, connecting with the angels and listening to a sleep podcast. I listen to one every night to help me drift off to sleep. And the thing that I have found about being a regular listener of sleep podcasts is essentially I'm looking for a different episode or something to listen to 365 nights a year. And sometimes I'll re-listen to an episode, or maybe I've fallen asleep during one that I'm finding interesting and I will, you know, re-listen to certain parts of it that perhaps I had fallen asleep to the night before. But what I found is I wanted more content. And so a few years ago, I was guided to add my voice to the mix. And this is the result, Sleepy Bedtime Blessings. So my intention has always been to publish twice a week on Sundays and Wednesdays. And I had been doing that pretty regularly for a couple of years. And recently, I've kind of gone into quiet spaces and my energy's a little different. Not the energy that connects with the angels, but the part of me that gets things done. You know, the part that responds to to-do lists and obligations and things like that. So I've been publishing more replays than new content, which I think is okay because I think very few of you out there have heard every single episode because there's over 200 of them. But this morning, I always record these episodes in the early morning because it's when the world is quiet. And I knew this morning I wanted to record an episode for you. And perhaps for me too, because I also listen to this podcast so that I can fall asleep. And I can tell you what I'm craving in this moment, because perhaps you are too. It is to simply bathe in the divine light. As I record this, the sun is already up. There are birds chirping. I don't know that you will be able to hear them on the recording, but it is a very hopeful sound. And I just want to sit in the light with you. So I know the light is this metaphor, right? Hold it up to the light. I'm sending you light and love. And it can be a metaphor for healing energy, for prayers, for divine love. I want to share with you one of my reference points for the light. And it was generated during my time as a student and a volunteer at the University of Santa Monica. So I started attending there in the fall of 2000. And I really didn't know anything about the university other than they taught spiritual psychology, and I knew I needed to be there. And the university, especially at that time, was profoundly intentional about co-creating sacred, light-filled spaces for their students and faculty. And one of the things that wound up happening fairly regularly was that the way the schedule for the university was set up for the program that I was in is we attended one weekend a month. So what that meant was the 3 weeks that I wasn't at the university, life would happen. And I might get triggered. I might get upset. Something might be frustrating me. You know, all of those very human things we go through, and especially all the material that can come up when we're on a very intentional, deep dive healing journey. So for those 3 weeks, I would kind of catalog all of the things I wanted to work with when I was in class my weekend that I was going to be there. And as I was driving up to Santa Monica, up to the building, I would have this laundry list of things I was upset about, that I had fear about, whatever that was. And what would happen is I would walk through the doors of the university, and I would start seeing people I knew and getting my hugs, and then we would go up into the classroom, and we would pray ourselves in, and we would meditate. And all of a sudden, I was fine. Like, all of the things that had been so heavily charged for me, my attachment towards them had dissipated. And, I mean, I still had material to work through, but it was this ongoing relationship with this sacred space where I didn't have to process anything. I didn't have to talk anything through. It was simply by being in this really powerful energy field that I experienced transformation. And that became a very regular experience for me in relationship to the University of Santa Monica. I also felt that when I would attend Agape Spiritual Center when I lived in Los Angeles. And I experienced this back in the day when I studied and staffed for Doreen Virtue's angel-related events. She's now not doing this work, so her energy is very different. I do not experience that from her anymore. But these were my reference points for being in the light, and that the light could do the heavy lifting of clearing and recalibrating and shining love upon the parts of us that are feeling triggered or heavy or challenged by life. And so as I record this, it is late April 2024, and I don't know about you, but life is feeling kind of heavy for me. I've got a really significant Saturn transit happening in my chart, and Saturn represents karmic fear. And I don't mean to sound like I'm really afraid. It more represents some of the core material that we're here to work with in this lifetime. So I've had stuff come up that ever generic. I have stuff, you know. And what it's about isn't necessarily important for you to know. I know what it is. And so my healing for this right now is to bathe in divine light. And so I wanted to share that with you because perhaps something's up for you. Because maybe you're listening to this the day it's published, or you're listening to it 5 years later, and you're thinking, Laurel, I've got stuff too. I can't believe you have stuff. I've got stuff too. And so this is the invitation to come into the light together, because the angels are here, and this is a sweet and sacred light-filled space. and the angels are infusing it with love, calibrated just for you. So I want to invite you to get comfortable in whatever way works best for you. And just take a nice deep breath in and out. And the angels are already here. And so I'm going to share an invocation so that you know that they are here as well. And beautiful angels on high, I am so grateful for your presence here, and I invite you to join us here. I ask that you infuse this broadcast with waves of divine light and love in ways that each one of us can receive. I ask that you lift any heaviness we might be feeling, especially that which does not belong to us, that you help us lift our feet up off the ground where we can touch the heavens and know that we are precious and loved. So, dear ones, just take another deep breath in and release. And I feel the light coming in. I feel it with us. So just imagine, if you will, that the room that you are in, the space you are in, is being filled with this beautiful light. And it is helping you feel lighter as well. Perhaps you feel lighter in your body. Or maybe you feel lighter in your heart, your emotional body. To just imagine, if you will, that you are floating gently in the light and your angels are with you. And they are helping to clear away that which is not yours, helping you connect more deeply with your higher self, with the beauty of your spirit, helping to fill your heart with love, because the angels love all that you are. Everything that you are is loved. And you are worthy of a big, beautiful life. You are worthy of goodness. You are worthy of being treasured. And the angels are here to support you and love you. So take another breath in and release, and just allow yourself to bathe in this river of light that is gently washing over you. The goodness is with you right now. And if you have prayers or intentions that you would like to share with the angels and with God, I invite you to bring them forward now. And simply allow yourself to receive. Allowing yourself to be uplifted. Allowing this beautiful vibrational broadcast to help calibrate you into the brightness of your authentic spirit. Together we call forward goodness. We call forward light. We call forward wonderful co-creations that delight our spirit. We call forward brighter tomorrows. We call forward the sweetest of dreams. And it is a blessing to be in the light together with you. So just breathe, allowing this light, this broadcast of love, to be present with you now. And if you are preparing for your sleep cycle, I invite you to get cozy, cozy on up, and snuggle on in. I am someone who loves bedtime, so I always love when the time is right for me to crawl into bed. And so I share my joy of bedtime with you, that cozy, sweet, comforting energy. So just breathe one more time. I know you're breathing all the time, but there's something about the intentional breath that is good for us. And so, my beautiful friends, I invite you to drift off whenever you are ready, and the angels will be with you. And if this is your waking time, then stay awake, especially if you're operating heavy machinery. For sure, stay awake and alert. So whatever you need to do right now, whether it is sleep or alertness, you know. And this light will remain with you, and the love of the angels will remain with you. And while you rest, we're going to move on into story time. And I have a wonderful story time for us in this episode. And I guess I should say it feels wonderful to me. It feels cozy and it feels like home. And it is another community cookbook. If you are a regular listener, you know I love reading through old community cookbooks, especially those from Jewish communities. I was raised Jewish and I love the idea of these community cookbooks. If you're new to this podcast and you don't know what they are, back in the day, women, almost always women, because back in the day, women were responsible for almost all of the cooking and housekeeping, that groups of women, so temple sisterhoods, church groups, PTAs, you know, where women would assemble, they would put together their recipes. And these aren't tried and true recipes in the way a current cookbook would be. You know, if Ina Garten releases a cookbook, those recipes are tried in test kitchens under different circumstances. So no matter who cooks that recipe, you will get the same results. These community cookbooks were not made in that way. They were the recipes the women used on a daily basis or for holidays. And they were recipes that their moms had passed on to them. And it was assumed that you had some level of skill in the kitchen. So quite often a recipe will say, make a pie crust, because you would know how to make a pie crust already. So it wouldn't give you all the instructions. And especially those recipes that were in the, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s, they incorporated a lot of the processed food, which nowadays we sort of go, oh no, processed food. But back then, processed food was amazing because it cut down on the amount of time that a woman would need to prepare meals, because back then they were preparing 3 meals a day. We didn't have meal prep services or drive-throughs, all of those conveniences we have today. So opening a can of something or taking out a frozen box of spinach was a huge time saver. So these recipes, to me, they're a part of history. They're a part of my history, especially if we're looking at a Jewish cookbook. And I love these women who would say, put in a can of this, a bag of that. And then they would prepare these meals. I find these recipes often have a lot of heart and represent the love that these women brought to caring for their families. This one is particularly interesting to me. It is the Stockton Community Cookbook, and it was published in 1924. Now, if you're not familiar with Stockton, Stockton is in California. It's in Central California. And nowadays, Stockton is not a destination place, right? It's not the kind of place that people are excited to go to. Like, I can't wait to go to Stockton. It exists. It's a town. It's very agricultural. And back in 1924, it was agricultural, but it also was one of the cities where the railroads would go. So there was some industrialization because product could make it to Stockton through the railroads. So I'm fascinated by the fact that there was enough of a Jewish community to publish a cookbook in 1924. And so I went and I pulled up some numbers for Stockton. So in 1920, the population of Stockton was about 40,000 people. And in 1930, it was about 48,000 people. And in 1919, so again, somewhere around this time, the Jewish population of San Joaquin Valley, which is where Stockton is, was 1,000 people. So about 2% of the population. So I'm really just fascinated that there was enough of a Jewish population in Stockton in 1924 to compile this cookbook. I've downloaded this off of Google Books. It looks to me to be a hardcover book. There's a lot of ads in the book, which I'll share with you, as well as tips for the homemaker, which we'll read through because it gives us some insight to life back then. So we start off with an ad for Hotel Wolf, a hotel where individual ideas are carried out for the comfort of our guests in an unusual manner. I have no idea what that means in practice, but it sounds interesting to me. And they have a roof garden serving dinner, dances, and club luncheons the year round. So it sounds as if that was a fantastic destination. There is a handwritten recipe on the next page, which is too faint to make out, but it looks like it's for some kind of cake. So whoever owned this cookbook that ultimately got scanned in by Google, they had handwritten a recipe on the cover page or the inside page. We get to the title page, and it says the Stockton Community Cookbook, compiled and published by the Ladies of Temple Israel, which must have been the synagogue there at the time. There's an acknowledgement page, and it says, it would be a pleasure to thank by name each one who has assisted in this book, but that is impossible. We appreciate the kindness of those who sent in recipes and the untiring efforts of those who contributed to the financial success of the book. We are indebted to our advertisers, and we have an added kindly feeling for them because from personal experience, we know their true worthiness and the merits of the articles they advertise. They then have a table of weights and measures, which I'm going to skip over. There is an advertisement for crystal distilled water. So it says, guard your health with pure water. Pure water is health insurance, and we are pure water specialists. Distilled water in any quantity, spring water, Calso water, I don't know what that is, Calso, White Rock, Vigor Tone, Alqua water, Shasta water, and ginger ales. So lots of different kinds of bottled water and water filters. So even back then, We were all about our water. There is an ad for a stovetop, a cooktop, an oven. It is Bridge Beach Superior. So it looks like it is, I don't know, a wood oven perhaps. I don't know for sure. We then come into household rules. Okay, we'll see how many of these we get through. They're talking about setting the table. And they're not just saying, you know, hey guys, here's your peanut butter and jelly sandwich, setting the table. They're talking about setting the table for a dinner party, for a lovely meal. So, you know, it's not just, you know, paper plate with some mac and cheese on it. I never set a table. This is why I'm laughing. You know, it's, you know, grab and go and eat on the couch kind of thing. But back in the day, setting the table. The table should be placed in the middle of the dining room with the center placed directly under the central light. Silence cloth cover the table with a silence or felt padding. Canton flannel or asbestos. Over this, spread a spotless tablecloth evenly, the middle crease dividing the table exactly in half. And just so you know, this is how my mother would set the table for a holiday. For breakfast, okay, now we're getting into other meals. For breakfast, luncheon, or supper, doilies, unpadded mats for hot plates may be used instead of cloth. The center decoration should be low. Place everything straight upon the table, as neat and attractive as possible. Avoid crowding the dishes. A cover consists of plates, glasses, silver, and napkin to be used by one person. The covers should be directly opposite each other. Heat dishes in which warm food is served, and chilled dishes for salad and ices. Service plate. This plate should be placed 1 inch from the edge of the table and should remain in place until the salad is served. On the service plate is placed the plate containing the cocktail glass for fruit or oysters, the appetizer, the bouillon cup or soup plate, and the hot plate for the main course. A little aside here, in a kosher Jewish home, you would not have oysters because that's shellfish. But they may not have cared about that. I wouldn't, but I'm just saying. And this is way too much work for me. But let's keep going. The knives, sharp edges towards the plate, are placed to the right, followed by the soup spoon, bowl turned up, with the cocktail fork at the extreme right end. The forks, tines turned up, are placed to the left of the service plate. Okay, I'm going to maybe skip over this. We're going through every conceivable thing. The napkins, the water glass, the silver, and then how to wait on a table, because apparently you have help. Or whoever's writing this has help. Maybe you don't, but back in 1924, a waitress stands on the left of each person, whether she is passing a dish from which one helps himself or placing or removing a plate. Well, that's very optimistic. There's help involved. If you have help that is dishing up your food, they have set the plate, the table for you, right? Then it's the order in which people are served and how to clear the table. Okay, so we're just going to skip over that. We move right into breakfast food, which doesn't excite me, so I don't know. Let's see what we're going to read next. Okay, let's skip over to biscuits and muffins because I am much more excited about dishes that celebrate carbs than I am just about plain old eggs. Eggs are good, but, you know, give me a good biscuit or muffin. So let's go to the biscuit muffin section, shall we? So baking powder biscuits, I think every homemaker of the day knew how to make a good biscuit. 2 cups of flour, 4 teaspoons of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 3/4 to 1 cup of milk or water, 2 tablespoons of shortening. Sift the dry ingredients together, rub the shortening into the flour with the tips of the fingers. Mix the milk into the flour gradually until as soft as can be handled easily. Put it on a floured board and roll out to about 1 inch in thickness. Cut with biscuit cutter and bake in a hot oven from 10 to 15 minutes. And a lot of these recipes say bake in a hot oven, a moderate oven, versus 400 degrees or 350 degrees. I would imagine a hot oven is somewhere around 400 degrees. There's Boston brown bread. I don't know how much the Cheesecake Factory's brown bread is similar to this, but if you've been to the Cheesecake Factory and had their brown bread, it is fabulous. So this sounds maybe similar, I don't know. Well, I don't actually know if it's similar. I'm just saying, when they said brown bread, this is where my mind went. Cheesecake Factory, said in a Homer Simpson voice. Okay, Boston brown bread. If any of you are from Boston, you can tell me if this is a truly a regional dish. 1 cup of sweet milk. I don't know what sweet milk would be if it's just regular milk, because then we have 2 cups of sour milk. 2/3 cup of molasses, which is where the sweetness comes from, right? It's already delicious. 2 cups of flour, 3 cups of cornmeal, pinch of salt, 1 teaspoon soda. Mix and sift dry ingredients, add milk and molasses, and place in a covered greased mold. Steam 3 hours, then bake in a few minutes. Oh, okay, this is like a pudding bread. This is not, forget the Cheesecake Factory reference. This is a dense steamed bread that I'm sure is so delicious that I'm never going to make. I am not steaming anything other than veggies. We then have a couple of donut recipes, which I'm just going to gloss on over. We've got cornbread, cornmeal muffins, date muffins. This one sounds good. I haven't even read it yet. Honey and cheesecakes. Okay, well, I love honey and I love cheesecake. So let's see if this is going to be good. 2 eggs well beaten. I don't know why I said beaten that way. Okay, but like emphasis on the T there. 1/2 cup of grated cheese or cottage cheese. 1 large tablespoon of honey. 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder. 1 pinch of salt and 1 cup of flour. Bake in a moderate oven in muffin tins. This sounds like, well, I was going to say it could be a Weight Watchers recipe because of the cottage cheese, but the 1 cup of flour kind of throws that off. I wonder what that would be like. Huh, I don't know. Just interesting. Ooh, cinnamon toast. Who remembers cinnamon toast? 2 tablespoons of butter. 2 tablespoons of cinnamon. Melt the butter, add cinnamon, and a little sugar. Yeah, and then let's stand until cold, and when needed, spread on hot slices of toast. That's a childhood memory for sure, cinnamon toast. All right, and then we have lots of bread recipes. Okay, here's one, coffee kuchen. So kuchen means cake in German, but my grandmother, who we called Nani, was famous for her kuchen. It was like a coffee cake, and my sister now will make it. So I don't know if this is like my nanny's kuchen, but we'll see. 1 cup of milk, 1/3 cup of butter, 1/4 cup of sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1 egg, 3/4 of a yeast cake dissolved in 1/4 cup of lukewarm milk, 2 3/4 cups of flour. Add butter, sugar, and salt to the milk. When lukewarm, add dissolved yeast cake, egg, well-beaten flour to make a stiff batter. Cover and let rise. Spread in buttered pan, 1/2 inch thick. Cover and let rise again. Before baking, melt 2 tablespoons of butter and spread over the coffee cake and sprinkle with cinnamon sugar. If at night, use 1/2 the quantity of yeast. And my grandmother would put nuts into the kuchen. It was delicious. Okay, we're moving on into appetizers. So, celery with cheese. Wash tender celery stalks. Place in water to keep crisp. Mash fresh cream cheese. Add chopped nuts and olives to taste. Spread the mixture on the grooves of celery and serve with toasted crackers. Roquefort cheese may be used in place of the cream cheese, working it in creamy with a little butter. Well, we've all had that, right? Some version of that. We have a couple ads now. Nestle's Alpine California Milk and Gaia DeLucci Company, manufacturers of Italian salama and sausages, ravioli, and tagliarini. They're on 320 East Market Street in Stockton. The phone number is 4816. So I don't know if there's more of an exchange that you need for the phone number. I just thought that's interesting. Okay, so they have a bunch of crab cocktail recipes and things like that, and lobster and oysters. So this was not a kosher synagogue because they wouldn't eat those things. All right, and I just really started moving through the cookbook because I was thinking these don't sound very Jewish to me. So they, which is fine, they just feel a little more mainstream. One that did catch my eye though is baked cantaloupe. Can we actually bake cantaloupe? I've never heard of that. It says put into each half of a cantaloupe a half a teaspoon of butter and a sprinkling of salt and pepper and bake it like a squash. I can't even imagine what that would taste like. We're in the vegetable section, and the one that I have to share with you is called attractive sweet potatoes. I love that we have that adjective, just in case you were wondering. They're very attractive. So we're going to boil 6 medium sweet potatoes. I love sweet potatoes, especially the Japanese variety. Oh my God, yum. So boil. I haven't had breakfast yet, so if I sound overly excited, it's because I'm really hungry. Boil 6 medium sweet potatoes. Skin and mash fine, adding 1 tablespoon of butter, 1 tablespoon of brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of thick cream, a pinch of nutmeg, red pepper, and salt. Mold into shapes of pineapples, and with the point of a teaspoon, make little dents for eyes, and in each put a little dab of butter. Put in well-buttered pan and hot oven. When the butter bits have made light brown specks like eyes in a pineapple, remove from oven and put green sprig in top and serve. Okay, so I guess we're shaping our mashed sweet potatoes into the shape of a pineapple, which is what makes it attractive. Sure, why not? I can't ever imagine that I would be the housewife that would take the time to mold my sweet potatoes into a pineapple. That takes such dedication. That feels so extra to me. But God bless the women who did that, because I would imagine as a child, I would have loved this. And just as an aside, I think that the fact that this cookbook is not overtly Jewish, other than it was created by the women of the temple, meant that this could be sold to a wider audience, because this is the kind of cookbook that anyone could use, right? It's very mainstream. So we're now in the salad section. So we have apples, celery, and raisin salad. I've always loved like a Waldorf salad. So 1 cup of diced tart apples, 1 cup of diced celery, 1/3 of a cup of seeded raisins, 1/2 a cup of French dressing, 1 head of lettuce. Combine the raisins and French dressing and let stand for 30 minutes. Then pour this over the apples and celery combined. Chill for 10 minutes, then arrange on crisp lettuce leaves. I love putting fruit into my salad. When I make my big salads, I always put in grapes and raisins. I just like to get a little bite of sweetness. Here's an interesting one. Alligator pear salad. Let's do some food trivia. Do you know what an alligator pear is? I promise you do, it just goes by a different name. Alligator pears are what people used to call avocados. Little interesting food trivia. So, we're going to take one alligator pear, aka avocado, two slices of pineapple, 1 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of paprika, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 1 teaspoon of lime juice, and lettuce. So peel the alligator pear and cut pulp into small pieces. Cut the pineapple in cubes. Have twice as much pear as pineapple. Arrange on lettuce leaves and mix the rest and pour over the fruit. There you go. You learned something new, perhaps, or maybe you already knew that. I don't want to assume you didn't know that because you're a smart person, right? Okay, let's keep going, shall we? We've got some ads. One is for Mazola oil, which we still have today. There's a Parisian French Laundry. There are San Francisco and Stockton steamers, meaning boats, leaving Stockton daily, including Sunday, and leaves San Francisco daily, except Sunday. So, and then there's Schmitz and Dobner. They are florists, decorators, and landscape gardeners. Ooh, a birthday salad. Okay, this must be special. Let's see what our birthday salad is. Place a thick round of sliced canned pineapple on a lettuce leaf on each plate for the base of a candlestick. Okay, this is going to be cute. Half of a banana cut crosswise and placed in the center of pineapple forms the candle. Of course it does. Half of a cherry placed on top of the banana forms the flame. Make a handle of sliced lemon rind and serve with any fruit salad dressing. Okay, as a kid, how excited would you have been to get that? Okay, then they're doing a cantaloupe or pineapple fruit salad, which is basically a lot of fruit, and you're going to put some kind of fruit salad dressing over it. I love a good fruit salad. All right, here's a classic. Ginger ale fruit salad. How many of you are already having, you know, sort of an automatic reaction in your memory bank to a Jell-O fruit salad made with some kind of soda pop? So the juice of 1 canned pineapple, enough ginger ale to make 1 pint of liquid, boil and pour over 1 package of lemon Jell-O, pour in mold, cut up pineapple and orange in bottom of mold. The dressing is 1 cup of pineapple juice, the juice of 1 orange, the juice of 1 lemon, 2 eggs, 1/2 cup of sugar. Boil until thick and strain. When ready to serve, add 1/2 pint of whipping cream beaten. Okay, sounds good. Okay, we've moved into the pudding section, and I have to stop for butterscotch rice pudding. I love butterscotch, and I actually love rice pudding. Trader Joe's used to have the best pudding, but they don't have it anymore. Well, let's look at what's in here. So, 3 tablespoons of butter, 1 cup of brown sugar. Okay, this is going to be way too sweet for me, but it's probably delicious. 2 cups of hot milk, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, 2 tablespoons of gelatin, 1/2 cup of cold water, 1 cup of cooked rice, 1 cup whipped cream. Okay, we're not going to actually make that. That's way too much sugar for 1 cup of cooked rice. Okay, so if you want the rest of the recipe, you just let me know and I'll send it to you. But we're going to move on. I have to say, just a little disappointed there aren't more Jewish recipes, because that's what I thought I was getting into, was a lot of recipes that made me think of home. These are still really good recipes, don't get me wrong, but... Oh, here's a chocolate cake recipe. Now, chocolate cake is just home for everybody, right? So 4 eggs, 1/2 cup of butter, 1 cup of white sugar, and half a cup of brown sugar. I bet that gave it a great flavor. I don't know that I've heard of a chocolate cake with brown sugar in it before. 2 cups of flour, 3 teaspoons of baking powder, half a cup of chocolate, 5 tablespoons of boiling water, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and 1/2 cup of milk, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. Cream the butter, add the sugar, yolks of eggs well beaten, flour, baking powder, salt, milk, and the chocolate dissolved in the boiling water. And lastly, add the stiffly beaten egg whites and bake in a spring-formed pan about 45 minutes in a moderate oven. I bet that was delicious. Yum. Then there are coffee cakes, coconut cake, a date cake, so, you know, all those kinds of fruit cakes. Lots of fruit cakes. Many, many fruit cakes. A graham cracker cake. Okay, I'm in. Let's see what's in that one. 1/2 cup of butter, 1 cup of sugar, 3 eggs, 1 scant cup of milk, 23 graham crackers rolled, 2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 cup of chopped nuts, and it looks like 1/4 teaspoon of salt. So cream the butter and sugar together, add yolks one at a time, and beat until very light. Then add milk, mix the sifted baking powder with cracker crumbs, add to mixture together with salt and nuts, last the beaten whites. Bake in 2 layers, and then the filling, because you're going to make a filling, 2 tablespoons of butter, 3 tablespoons of powdered sugar, 1 egg yolk, and vanilla. We're going to beat the egg light and cream and the butter and sugar and mix with the egg and flavor. All right, that sounds good. Oh, here's something called Honolulu Lady Cake. Let's see, 1 cup of butter, 2 cups of sugar. That's a lot of sugar. 3 eggs, 2/3 of a cup of chocolate, 2 cups of flour, 2/3 a cup of boiling water, 1/2 cup of sour milk, 1 teaspoon of soda, and 1 heaping teaspoon of vanilla. Cream the butter and sugar together, add beaten eggs, then chocolate, sour milk, and soda, dissolved in 1 tablespoon of boiling water. Then add flour, vanilla, and last the boiling water, and bake in 3 layers. It doesn't tell you what to put in between the layers. It feels like something's missing from that recipe. I wouldn't make that one. I wouldn't go for that one. Something else, I think, is supposed to be there. Here's a never-failing recipe for loaf cake. 1 level cup of sugar, 1/2 level cup of butter, 2 eggs well beaten, 1/2 cup of milk, 1 2/3 cup sifted flour into which has been sifted 1 rounded teaspoon baking powder. We're going to mix well and add 2/3 teaspoon of any good flavoring, which I think they must mean vanilla or almond or something like that. Beat 1 way thoroughly until all is light and creamy. Pour into a well-greased pan and bake in a moderate oven. All right, and we can wrap it up with the cookies section, because I love a good cookie. All right, we've got brownies, because who doesn't love a good brownie? I guess I don't really need to read you this recipe. You know, there's plenty of brownie recipes out in the world. There's something called cheese cookies, so equal quantities of cottage cheese, butter, and flour. 1 cup of each. Mix well and roll out like a pie crust. Cut in squares and turn corners over like a turnover. Before rolling over, fill with jam, brush with milk, sugar, and chopped nuts, and bake in a medium oven about 25 minutes. I think my aunt used to make something like this that she called nut cups. They were really delicious. How about chocolate cookies, number 1? Because there's a couple of different chocolate cookie recipes. 2 cups of brown sugar. Okay, a lot of sugar, 2 cups of brown sugar, 1/2 cup of melted butter, 2 eggs, 4 tablespoons of chocolate, 1.5 teaspoons of vanilla, 1 cup chopped walnuts, 1 cup flour. Mix all together and bake in oblong pan about 30 minutes. Have oven hot at first, then decrease heat and cut in desired shapes. Okay, as a kid, I'm sure I would have been absolutely delighted by that. How about cornflake cookies? Okay, let's see what's in those. The whites of 2 eggs, 3/4 cup of sugar, 1 cup of coconut, 2 cups cornflakes, a pinch of salt and vanilla. Beat the whites very stiff, add the sugar, coconut, cornflakes, salt and vanilla. Drop from spoon on greased pan and bake in a slow oven. Oh, I bet those were kind of crunchy. I bet those were good. Okay, how about something called a Scotch Fancy? I don't know, that just sounds delightful. 1 cup of brown sugar, 3/4 cup of butter, 2 cups rolled oats, 1 cup flour, 1/2 cup boiling water, 1/2 cup milk, 2 eggs, 1 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1 teaspoon cloves, 1 teaspoon nutmeg, 1 cup of raisins, 1 cup chopped nuts, 1 level teaspoon of soda. Cream the sugar and butter. Add eggs, rolled oats, water, and milk. Sift spices with flour. Add raisins, nuts, and lastly soda dissolved in a little warm water. Bake in a sheet and cut into squares. You can almost taste all of the spice coming through the recipe. And then snickerdoodles. I wonder if those are like snickerdoodles. 1 cup of sugar, 3/4 cup of butter, 2 eggs, 2.5 cups of flour, 3/4 cup of milk, 3 teaspoons of baking powder. Mix all together, drop on tins by spoonful, and sprinkle with sugar and cinnamon. Just an aside, my husband loves snickerdoodles. All right, I said we were ending at cookies, but we're not. We're moving on to candy. I didn't realize there was a candy section that we had to look at. There is a candy called Huffy Puffle Candy. Huffy Puffle Candy. I don't know what it is. I just love the name. So we're going to take 2 1/2 cups of white sugar, 1 cup of white Karo syrup, 1/2 cup of boiling water. Boil until a firm ball is formed. Then pour slowly into the beaten whites of 2 eggs. Beat until thick, and then add 1 cup of chopped walnuts, 1 teaspoon of vanilla, and also coloring if desired. Continue to beat, and when firm, drop in teaspoonfuls on a plate. I think I like the name more than I like the recipe. It's a great name, isn't it? A baked nut candy, 2 cups of brown sugar, 2 cups of chopped nuts, a pinch of salt, a pinch of soda, and the whites of 2 eggs. Beat the whites, add sugar, salt, soda, and nuts, and spread in a buttered pan and bake 20 minutes in a moderate oven. When cool, cut into squares. How about peanut brittle? Should we make some peanut? I love peanut brittle. I don't eat this stuff anymore. I'm just saying. My memory banks. Enjoyed a good peanut brittle back in the day. 2 cups of sugar. 1/2 to 1 cup of shelled peanuts. 1/3 cup of water. Put sugar and water in saucepan and cook until light brown. Have peanuts sprinkled over buttered pan. Pour syrup over. And when cool, marked in squares. I will just also add that on TikTok, I follow a couple of candy stores who make their own candy, and I love watching them make the candy. Oh, here's one, puffed rice candy. Puffed rice, aka Rice Krispies. 1.5 cups of sugar, 1/2 cup of corn syrup, 3/4 cup of water, 1 box puffed rice, butter the size of a large walnut. So we're going to boil the sugar, corn syrup, and water until it brittles when tested in cold water. Take off the fire, add butter, and fold in puffed rice. Spread 1/2 inch thick on a dampened board or buttered platters. Well, that sounds like an early version of Rice Krispie treats without the marshmallows. And there are more ads sprinkled without. The one I want to give a shout out to is the Manischewitz matzah, matzah meal, and farfel are wholesome and delicious for use the year round, on sale at all leading groceries. And I don't know if you're in the know of such things, but Manischewitz just went through a huge rebranding, which it's an amazing, amazing rebranding. It's bright colors. It's fun. It looks completely different now. I actually did buy a box of matzah because Wes likes matzah. And so we now have a box of Manischewitz matzah in our house. Thank you very much. Also, here is an ad for your morning home paper, Stockton Independent, at a cost of just 2.5 cents per day. They do have Passover dishes here. Well, that's good. Matzah pancakes. We're going to soak 4 matzahs. Drain well. Add the yolks of 4 eggs, salt, a tablespoon of sugar, vanilla, the whites of eggs beaten well. Mix well and fry in small cakes in hot fat. And when one side is fried, you'll turn and fry on the other. As soon as taken from pan, sprinkle with sugar, a form of matzah brei, which is a breakfast we would have had many times over Passover. So, a matzah pudding, so 4 matzahs, 1 tablespoon of butter, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 4 eggs, 1 lemon, 3/4 cup of sugar. Soak matzah, drain well, put in a mixing bowl, add butter, salt, and then add the yolks 1 at a time. Stir all together well, add lemon juice and sugar, and if desired, 2 tablespoons of nut meats. Lastly, the beaten egg whites. Bake about 1/2 hour and serve with a wine or lemon sauce. And then we have more ads, including for the exclusive laundry. The phone number is 1200. I don't know if you just would dial those 4 numbers or what. Then we have household hints. To keep lemons fresh, keep your lemons in a glass fruit jar, screwing the top on tight. Your lemons will be fresh and ready to use at any time. To open a can of asparagus, always open asparagus cans at the bottom instead of the top, because by doing this, you not only avoid breaking some of the tender tips, but it is much easier to remove asparagus from can as the stalks slip out more easily. Well, that's a good idea. Open canned fruits and vegetables 1 hour or so before needed. It is richer when the oxygen is thus removed. Well, I didn't know that. Dry mustard rubbed on the hands will remove any disagreeable odor. But then wouldn't you just smell like mustard? I don't know. Okay, there's lots of these here. More advertisements. Gould's The Light Man. Biggest because the best. Radio, electric shop, washing machines, and electric sweepers sold on payments. That's good. I would have been all about electric appliances as soon as they became available. I'd be like, give me help. Anything. Washing machine, yes. Electric sweeper, for sure. And that brings us to the end of this cookbook. Wasn't as Jewish as I thought, but still interesting, right? And it's a sleep podcast. You might be asleep already. So here's to sweet dreams, my friends. Thank you for allowing me the honor of spending this time with you and keeping you company. I deeply appreciate you. And I'm really grateful for our time together. I hope the light has found you. I hope you can breathe a little bit more easily than you could before. And truly, I am grateful for you. So sweet dreams, my friends, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks for listening.